TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Fast Food World. Wheeler Auditorium at UC Berkeley was filled to capacity. Several hundred had to be turned away. The physicist and seed collector Vandana Shiva from India. The Kentucky farmer and poet Wendell Berry. Eric Schlosser, who wrote Fast Food Nation, and the founder of the slow food movement, Carlo Petrini from Italy, were exchanging thoughts about the crisis of modern agriculture. Michael Pollan, professor and author of The Botany of Desire, had brought them together. This is part three of a three-part series on fast food and its antidote, slow food. If you joined us for the earlier broadcasts, you heard the problems defined. This segment is dedicated to solutions. The speakers already described industrial agriculture as a system that is highly dependent on oil, that is in the hands of a few large corporations that control food production from seed to harvest, and from plant or animal to supermarket. The international aspects were discussed as well. Subsidized cheap grains from the first world are flooding markets in third world countries and are driving farmers off the land. Poor people in the third world are producing food for first world people who are growing overweight, while those who work on the export farms go hungry. Here is the discussion of solutions. Michael Pollan responds to the question, is awareness growing that there is something fundamentally wrong with our food system?
I do think that there is a revolt underway. One of the things that has struck me as most hopeful since I've been writing about food is just how much power the consumer has, and that the consumer has driven a lot of positive change already. I mean, the growth of the organic agriculture movement in the face of opposition from the government, opposition from corporations. I think that food is one area where the right decision is often, as Carlos pointed out, the most pleasurable decision. And there's great power in that. I think when you can reunite pleasure and politics.
I think that this whole system depends on ignorance. Not just in regard to food, but in some ways most strongly with food. And once people are aware of not only what they're eating, but what they're feeding to their kids, their behavior changes. And again, I get back to the issue of cost and pollution. In talking about fast food, this cheap food is a food that's imposing enormous external costs on society. And it's a struggle not just to make people aware of that, but also to take these external costs and put them back on the companies that are inflicting it elsewhere. So just something like the obesity epidemic that we have among children in the United States. I mean, there's a growing recognition that this is connected to what they're eating and how it's being marketed to them. Time magazine a couple of weeks ago had an incredible statistic. It came from a survey by Gerber Foods of what toddlers eat. And it found that 21% of American toddlers eat French fries every day. Now, the obesity epidemic is, and those are children aged 19 months to 23 months every day. And so I think the change is going to come not only because people become aware, but the cost of this obesity epidemic and the cost of so many unwell children is going to be astronomical.
That was Eric Schlosser. Now the moderator, Orville Schell, asks the next question. Vandana Shiva answers.
Here's somebody in the audience who asks, organic food is great in concept, but how do we get good, healthy food to poor people? How do we make this food affordable to them?
I think the first place to start is to move the subsidies, and I believe those subsidies have a legitimate place to be, to move them from being used to market GM foods. whether it's for third world food aid or it is in the larger distribution chain in domestic systems, to turn that food aid into supporting high-quality organic food, which would both help the farms economically and it would make sure quality food reaches people. The point is, I think what's very often forgotten is ecological is the only viable system. It's been rendered unviable by a very fake system which can't stand on its feet without huge subsidy structures. The industrial food system would collapse the day the $400 billion subsidies behind it is withdrawn. If that system would just collapse. So it is necessary to direct public support to make sure high-quality food, locally grown in neighborhood systems, becomes available through the public money that's anyway going to keep a bad, unhealthy system to create obesity. So we need to finance health rather than obesity through public money.
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, you know, if you go to McDonald's today, you can get a salad now for something like $4.99. And for the same amount of money, you can get 5 hamburgers. We're subsidizing the hamburger, the cheap, fossil fuel-driven meat, corn-fed meat, and we're not subsidizing the lettuce. And that's a big part of the problem, that we're subsidizing the wrong things. There's something that happens in this country every 5 years. We have this thing no one pays attention to, nobody in a room like this, nobody in Berkeley pays much attention to, and that is the Farm Bill, the inaptly named Farm Bill. There is a set of rules in this country that creates the food system we have, that subsidizes the cheap food, the fast food nation, that gives us our obesity crisis, that gives us the enmity of all these small farmers around the world who we're dumping produce on. Foreign policy in this country runs roughshod over public health concerns, over foreign policy goals. And the reason for that is we think it's a parochial issue. It's a farm state issue. And those of us who live in cities really don't think it's that we have a dog in this fight. We do. If it were called the food bill, which is what it should be called, we would all pay attention. We would all lean on our congressmen. And we could have a very different food system if we took the trouble to pay attention.
Wendell, in our efforts at home, there's been some attention given to making vouchers or food stamps viable on the farmers' markets, viable currency. But if you see the next, I believe it's going to be in the next Harper's magazine, Bill McKibben has an article on local economy. And he tells about a cafe owner in Barrie, Vermont, who is drawing his raw materials, so to speak, from a 60-mile radius around his restaurant and selling his food at prices that are comparable to other hamburger joints.
That was Wendell Berry. Here's Carlo Petrini, president of the Slow Food Movement in Italy.
Mangiamo di meno.
Let's eat less.
Mangiamo meglio.
And let's eat better.
E allora la questione del prezzo non è una grande questione.
So the whole issue of prices is not really that big an issue.
Non bisogna esagerare.
You don't need to exaggerate.
Ma non bisogna neanche far la demagogia sul prezzo del cibo.
But we cannot be demagogues with regards to the price of food.
Nella storia dell'umanità si è mai speso così poco per mangiare.
In the whole history of humanity, we have never spent as little as we do right now for to eat well.
Noi in Italia, una famiglia italiana spende il 14% del reddito.
An Italian family in Italy spends 14% of their income.
Nel 1950 spendeva il 50% del reddito.
In 1950, they spent 50% of their income.
Allora, bisogna finirla con questa leggenda metropolitana che il cibo è caro.
So let's end this metropolitan and urban legend that food is expensive. Come on.
Mangiate di meno.
Eat less.
Perfetto.
Perfect.
E mangiate bene.
But eat well.
Perché quando io mangio una fetta di prosciutto,
because when I eat a slice of prosciutto,
questo prosciutto dopo pochi minuti è Carlo Petrini.
Because after a few minutes this prosciutto becomes Carlo Petrini.
fate attenzione, perché le mutande di Armani,
because Armani's underwear,
sono sempre fuori Carlo Petrini.
You know, they're always outside Carlo Petrini.
E non è più giusto pagare più care le mutande che il prosciutto.
And it is not fair that you have to pay more for pants than for prosciutto.
Non è. Sono stato una volta da un avvocato americano.
Well, one time I was at an American lawyer's office.
Mi ha detto buongiorno.
And he said good morning.
E mi ha messo un orologio.
And he placed a clock.
Perché lui costava tanto al minuto.
Because he cost so much money per minute.
E nessuno mette l'orologio al contadino quanto deve fare la terra, quando deve rivoltare, quando deve lavorare.
And nobody places a clock in front of a peasant or a farmer when he has to work on the land, when he has to ply, when he has to turn the soil.
Perché la lettera di un avvocato deve costare un milione e un prodotto come questo deve costare niente?
And how come then an attorney's letter or an hour from a lawyer has to cost a million and a product like this one that you see right here
non
must cost nothing?
Non si può rispettare biodiversità, cibo e contadini se non si mette mano al portafoglio.
You cannot respect biodiversity, food and farmers if you do not put your hands in your pocket, in your wallet.
That was Carlo Petrini. He is the moderator, Orville Schell, with an explosive question from the audience.
Here's a question I ask you, panelists and audience alike, to brace yourself. What is good about corporate agriculture? Maybe each person gets a chance to say one thing. Eric?
The bathrooms are clean.
If they have them.
Just had the entry of corporate agriculture in India now, and they have brought us suicides. 25,000 farmers have committed suicide.
But I asked you, say something good about corporate
agriculture. What I'm saying is there's nothing good they bring to us. I was giving you a list of the nasties they bring to us. But especially in the third world situation, corporations come merely as traders. They bring no benefits to any part of society. They definitely make our governance worse than what we had. And I believe agriculture is something we've done very well without them.
I'm not going to say anything good about them, even if I knew anything good about them. I think that we are well advanced into a corporate dictatorship. My opposition to this began about 1906 or 1907, when my daddy was a little boy. And his father had sent his tobacco crop to market at Louisville. He went down the next day to see it sold on the boat. And when he came back that night, he didn't have a dime, because it had cost everything that the crop had brought to pay the sale commission on it. And I was down at Duke University not very long ago. Duke University has the only medieval Methodist chapel in the world. And out in front, there's a statue where the saint would ordinarily be. A statue of James B. Duke, standing there with a cigar. And I walked all around that statue. On one side it said businessman. And on the other side, it said philanthropist. And I said, yes, you son of a bitch, I understand exactly what that means. You steal enough money from people like my grandfather in order to be generous with it and get the reputation of a philanthropist. So I'm not here to say anything good about the corporations. I'm here to oppose them, and I've opposed them all my life. And my father opposed them all his life.
Time is late. I thought maybe we'd end up. It'd be interesting for each of the panelists to maybe tell you some very quick thoughts about what one step, at least, they think might be possible to take, given the nature of the critique that we've heard this evening. Let's start with you, Eric.
Open your eyes and then act on what you see. And different people are going to choose different actions. But again, I ended my talk with something very concrete and immediate, and I would say boycott Tyson. And you can do that guilt-free.
And I'll just add three to that one. It's a boycott Monsanto. And make the Cargills and the ConAgras pay the full price of the trade from which they are making super profits, because they are leaving it all as an externality in terms of ruined soils, wiped out ecosystems, dispossessed farmers, and bad health for everyone. And given what I know from your book, Eric, about high fructose corn syrup, I think we need to add Philip Morris to the list. But I would just add one other thing. You know, I took a break from physics as a scientist to start looking at what was going on in agriculture. I have been an ecological activist as long as I can remember. But the fact that I have spent just so much time working in agriculture was, as a scientist, I could not believe how many lies had been told to us about the food system, about basic things like productivity, about basic stuff about who feeds whom, at a time when still 70% of the world is fed by smallholders and women. We are made to believe it's the Cargills we depend on. And I think we need to really revisit our food culture from ABC. And that is where the respect for the producer, the respect for the third world, the respect for the diversity will start. And our fear that the five giants that are trying to give us, they cannot but give us bad food that causes bad health, causes ill health. They cannot, not through the systems that they have mastered. And they cannot become small scale to give us high quality food. It's impossible for them. I think we really need to begin once again to think and act on what food is about.
That was Vandana Shiva. Here is Wendell Berry.
Well, I persuaded myself into a situation a while ago in which I spoke in anger, and I think that's the wrong thing to do, and I apologize. I think the way to begin is to ask yourself what you know about your own economy. Say your own food economy. Ask yourself where your food came from and what the cost of its production was, what the ecological cost and what the human cost was. And I think the result of that exercise is that you'll understand that you don't know very much at all in the way of answers to such questions. And I think when you come to that point, when you understand your ignorance of your own economy, you will understand that the only way to become knowledgeable about it is to exert your economic force in support of local production.
Carlo, I know your first suggestion might be to join slow food movement, but besides that, what practical steps occur to you as takeable?
Beh, la parte non è irrilevante, è quella di associarsi a Slow Food.
No, that's not the most important part to associating with Slow Food.
Fa la differenza.
Fa la differenza. It,
but it's, I'm sorry, it does make a difference.
Io raccomando tre cose.
My recommendation is threefold.
La prima cosa, educate costantemente i vostri sensi.
The first of all, educate your senses all the time.
Vi possono aprire una conoscenza straordinaria della materia.
Because they will open up for you an extraordinary knowledge of.
Non mangiate in modo sbadato.
Don't eat in a disorderly fashion.
Fate attenzione.
Pay attention.
Cogliete le sfumature e le differenze.
Pick up the nuances, the differences.
Senza esagerare, eh?
Don't go too far, though.
Perché io ho visto dei sommelier che girano il bicchiere e sentono il profumo di odore di cavallo in corsa.
Sì, because I have seen sommeliers who turn the glass around and they smell even the smell of a horse in a race.
Non esagerare.
Let's not exaggerate.
Però educare i sensi, sì.
But do educate your senses, yes.
E sappiate che i nostri sensi, più diventiamo vecchi, più si impoveriscono.
And you must know that our senses become poorer and poorer as we grow older.
Allora, i bambini in modo particolare, facciamo in modo che crescano con questa sensibilità.
So especially with young children, it's very, very important to allow them to grow up having this sensitivity.
Che era una delle forze della società contadina.
This was one of the great strengths of a peasant society.
Riconoscere la materia con i sensi e non con i laboratori chimici.
This was to know matter, to know products with the senses and not with chemical labs.
Secondo consiglio, sostenete l'agricoltura locale.
My second piece of advice is support your local agriculture.
E lottate perché ci sia la tracciabilità del prodotto.
And struggle so you can the whole product, the process of the product can be traced.
E se possibile, dedicate anche del tempo per conoscere i produttori.
And if you can, please spend time getting to know the producers, the people who produce the things.
Perché conoscere i produttori è un arricchimento.
Because that enriches people when you know who produces food.
Terzo elemento che è molto importante.
And a third element which is very, very important.
Salviamo e lavoriamo uniti con quella parte del mondo dove c'è ancora il 70-80% di contadini.
And let us save and let us unite with that whole area of the world where there is still 70-80% peasant.
In Italia sono solo più il 3%.
In Italy there's only 3%.
Qui in America mi pare sia il 2%.
And I believe in the United States 2%.
E il dramma di non avere più questa saperi, queste conoscenze.
And it is a great drama not to have this knowledge, this wisdom.
Non può diventare un dramma globale.
We must not let it become a global drama.
Allora noi che viviamo nei paesi dove abbiamo possibilità.
So those of us who live in countries where we still have possibilities.
Sosteniamo la causa in quei paesi dove i contadini sono 70-80%.
So please let us support the cause in those countries where peasants make up 70-80% of the
perché
population.
Perché se tutti questi contadini si vanno a inurbare è come una bomba atomica.
Because if these peasants move away from the countryside and they go into cities, that's going to be like an atom bomb.
Devono avere dignità e orgoglio di stare nei loro villaggi.
They should be proud and they should be dignified to stay and remain in their villages.
E noi siamo importanti in questa unità.
So we are instrumental in this kind of unity.
E quindi così importante questo concetto, che se è vero che esiste un concetto di terra madre.
So it's, this is this concept is so important that, so that if it is true that the whole idea of the mother earth exists.
Quella che le popolazioni medio americane chiamano Pachamama.
The one called Pachamama in middle American societies.
Che dà il senso della maternità, della dell'attenzione verso i suoi figli.
See, this is the Earth Mother or Mother Earth that gives you the sense of trust and attention towards his children.
Allora io vi dico questo: assumiamo anche il concetto di terra patria.
So let us. This is what I'm telling you. Let us acquire this whole concept of Earth as the fatherland and motherland.
Di terra patria.
Yes.
La mia patria non è l'Italia.
My fatherland, my motherland is not Italy.
L'Italia è la mia cultura.
Italy is my culture.
La mia patria è la terra.
My fatherland, motherland is the earth.
Questo, guardate che è molto importante questo nella testa, eh?
Please keep this in mind. Keep it inside your heads. This is very important.
Io sono italiano, tu sei americano, tu sei indiano. No, siamo tutti in una unica terra.
I'm Italian, you're from the US, she's from India. No, that's not how it is. We're all here in one planet.
Questo Earth. È globalizzazione virtuosa.
This is virtuous globalization.
Possiamo essere qua.
And we can do it.
That was Carlo Petrini, president of the Slow Food Movement. You heard part three of a three-part series on Fast Food World with the physicist and seed collector Vandana Shiva from India, the Kentucky farmer and poet Wendell Berry, and Eric Schlosser, who wrote Fast Food Nation. Michael Pollan, professor and author of The Botany of Desire, had brought them together. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on Fast Food World on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete three-part program of Fast Food World by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.